You are listening to the Pronk Pop Show, presented by Raymond Thomas Pronk, the People's Paladin Pronk, propagating faith, family, friends, freedom first. Broadcasted by Renaissance Radio, Radiating Reason, and KDUX Web Radio. Podcasted by ProncPops.wordpress.com and KDUXWebRadio.wordpress.com. You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas, with a voice of Richland College. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of KDUX Web Radio, Richland College, or the Dallas County Community College District. Welcome to the Pronk Pop Show. This is the Tuesday edition. The story in the news today is the large order by the court. There was a suit between the state of Oklahoma and Johnson & Johnson. And the judge ordered Johnson & Johnson, a big pharmaceutical company, most people are familiar with Johnson & Johnson, to pay the defendant $572 million. The state was asking over $17 billion. This will be appealed by Johnson & Johnson, and I think I'm going to cover this story in detail because there are different dimensions to it, and it's regarding opioids. Now, Johnson & Johnson, part of its small part of its business is opioids, but there are a number of drug companies, pharma, big so-called big pharma, that are watching this case. And what I find disturbing about it is, first of all, it's trying to place blame on, in this case, a drug company for the opioid problem. And I wasn't in court, so that's the first thing I need to say and warn you, don't try to second guess what the judge is saying. But I think they're going to win on appeal. I think this is going to be thrown out. That's just my opinion. But there's much bigger issue here, and that's the fact that you have over 100 million Americans that suffer various degrees of pain, and I can include myself in it. I've had, recently, the beginning of this month, and I usually get these once every 5 or 6 years. It's not what doctors would call a chronic condition. It's an acute back pain, lower back pain. And that's one of the most common complaints and reasons why when people go to the doctor and seek relief, it's because of pain problems and, in particular, back pain problems. Now, we've all heard, or most of us have heard, of the so-called opioid crisis, and it looks like the number of deaths are heading towards 100,000 per year. We're not quite there yet, but we will be in, if not this year, next year. And it is a problem. But we have to keep in mind that Americans, at any given day, you have many Americans in pain, but the problem is those that have chronic pain. And let me give you two definitions. Acute pain is usually short-term. Now, what's short term? Up to 90 days. I'm just giving an arbitrary point. For most people, they'll have a pain, they'll take some medicine, either prescribed or over the counter. They could take Tylenol, aspirin. There are a number of drugs you can take to relieve pain, and people do that. But the big but is, what if the pain gets worse, worse, and worse? In other words, the over-counter medication that you can go into any drugstore, even a grocery store, and buy is not working, or your pain gets worse and worse. In other words, maybe for minor pains and aches, I'm allergic to aspirin, so I will take Tylenol. But if it's something that I think involves inflammation or swelling, I will take ibuprofen. So you have, the way I like to think of it, I have a chart that shows this. You have non-opioid medications such as aspirin, acetaminophen, ibuprofen, Advil's example, that or Motrin, and you have Aleve. And those are the common over-the-counter medications that people will take for pain. It could be a headache, it could be back pain, it could be muscle pain. But, and here's the but, if people, for example, were injured in an automobile accident, seriously injured, or have to undergo surgery, initially they might be given opioids. That could be codeine, hydromorphine, oxycodone, hydrocodone. But the deadly one that's killing people is fentanyl. But it can be prescribed in a medical setting. So what's the problem? If the condition is chronic, in other words, you're always in pain for more than 90 days, what have doctors been prescribing? Opioids to relieve the pain. And they work. And they have worked. They work for many, many people. But here's the big but here. If you take them for too long, in other words, let's say you start with, instead of non-opioid, not doesn't require a prescription drug, you started with an opioid, and that would have to be prescribed. Oh, yes, it will relieve the pain. But if you take it for too long, and that depends on each person, you will, first of all, become addicted to it, and you can tolerate it more and more, which means you need to take more and more. In other words, your tolerance goes up. Now, what's the big problem? You get addicted to it. And getting off of the medication is a big problem. With any addiction, that is the problem. As a result, you have a major addiction problem from people that are not drug addicts in the sense that they didn't go out to get a high. They took the medication to treat what? Pain. And what's happened is the CDC, Center for Disease Control, puts out guidelines. And what's happening is many people that have not acute pain, but chronic pain, they no longer can get the dosage, and that's one of the key things. Dosage is very key here, because if you do get addicted and you're trying to get off it, what you do is gradually, and this can be over weeks, depending on where you start, you gradually reduce the dosage. Now, why am I giving you these details? A lot of Americans, I'm talking over 100 million, are in pain. Not everyone is going to be taking opioids, but this can happen to anyone where the pain simply doesn't go away. In other words, you initially started with non-opioids. This could be going on months. And usually if it goes on more than a couple of weeks or a month, not only should you see a doctor, and you probably will have tests. You need to get a good diagnosis as to what's going on here. And then up until not too long ago, opioids were recommended because guess what? They work. That's what you need to understand. They do work. But they have side effects, and one of them being you can get addicted to them. And then once you are addicted to them, now if you talk to people, they would say it's not very hard to get addicted to them. You have to go through a withdrawal period. And I have, for those that are new listeners to the show, the way you listen to the show is go to my companion blog, which is prompops.wordpress.com. And under my photograph, you will see a link to the most recent 60 to 80 shows, and this is the most recent show, 1,312. And before I forget, we will not be having a show Thursday and Friday. We have construction in the studio. The studio is closed. We have new wiring coming in and new air ducts. So I was hoping to give a show Thursday and Friday. I won't be giving a show Thursday and Friday. So today's show and tomorrow's show will be the last show of the week. And then hopefully we'll get back to a regular schedule come Tuesday after Labor Day. So if you go to my companion blog and go to every show I give you some of my show prep for each story. Now, this is a second story, but I decided to really focus in on this. And then towards the end of the show, there are two other stories I'm going to hit. One, the Iranians are not going to sit down with us until we end sanctions. Well, that's not going to happen. And no surprise here, there are 19 states that are suing the federal government over, and I went over this a couple of shows ago, the federal government is coming out with a new rule. They're doing away with the Flores rule. And what that involves is children. Under the Flores rule had to be released within 20 days. And that led to a policy of catch and release. In other words, to avoid separating illegal alien parents from their children, they would release both the children and the parents together. And you'd never see them again. They would be released into the United States, and most likely you never see them again. Now, a few would show up, but most wouldn't. So to end this policy, the Homeland Security is going to keep both the children with the parents in separate facilities called family residential centers. And they will keep them there most likely for up to 50, 60 days. But it's indefinitely until they get a hearing and a date. And then they'll be released. And most of them, I mean, when I mean a hearing, they probably will be determined that they don't have refugee status and will be sent home. In other words, removed and deported to their country of origin. So you have 19 states that are complaining about that, and they're taking it to court. I think the federal government will win on this because this solves a big problem. You know, the Democrats were going on and on. You're separating children from their families. Well, they were trying to take advantage. The illegal aliens were taking advantage, and the drug cartels were taking advantage of this because they're part of this business, if you will, knowing that if they say they want asylee status, then they can't automatically deport them. In other words, they should get a hearing. And that would take more than 20 days. So when the 20-day is up, they would be releasing the children with the parents. If they do away with this law, there will be no catch and release. It will fundamentally do away with catch and release. Yes, it means both the children and the parents will be in a family residential center. In other words, a family setting. It's not a prison. It's not a detention center. And remember, the taxpayers are paying for this. But this should, over time, and remember, this rule doesn't go in effect for another 60 days. So I want to bring that to your attention. Everyone expected that this new rule be challenged. Well, yes, 19 states plus the Washington, D.C. are joined in a federal lawsuit. This will ultimately, I believe, go to the Supreme Court, and it will be up to the Supreme Court to rule whether the Department of Homeland Security should do this. I think it should be because it actually helps both the parents and the children in the sense that it finally gets resolved. They couldn't do it in a couple of weeks, but they should be able to do this in 50, 60 days, maybe shorter. And a lot of people that would just disappear, I love the phrase, disappear into the shadows, will not be disappearing to the shadows. They will, the way I like to say it, the family that stays together will be deported together. And see, that's what the Democratic Party doesn't want. The Democrats want all the illegal aliens that make it into the country to get citizenship. That is their goal. And the reason is very simple. You have anywhere from 30 to 60 million illegal aliens in the country. If they all get citizenship, and that is the goal of the Democratic Party, amnesty. Now, they'll say, well, we're for open borders, and we don't want to give them any money to build a barrier. But we have a problem. The invasion keeps going on and on and on. Surges of people coming into the country illegally. You see, the American people support legal immigration. I support legal immigration. What the American people oppose, and I mean Democrats, Republicans, and independents, is for the last 33 years, we've had invasion after invasion after invasion of illegal aliens into this country. And it's estimated that for every one they apprehend, 2 to 3 they don't catch. And as a result, over a 33-year period, that's why you have 30 to 60 million of them here. And if they all get citizenship, the expectation is, and this is why the Democrats support it, that the Democrats will get at least 2 out of 3 of whatever the number is. No one knows what the exact number is, and maybe even as high as 3 out of 4. And once that happens, the Democrats will control the Congress, the House, the Senate, and the presidency. That's why the Democrats are keep pushing open borders. They don't want any barrier, any fence, any wall, won't give them a dime. But what's happening in the interim? Drugs, marijuana, but heroin, meth, are all flooding into the United States. The drug cartels make money now, not only with the smuggling of drugs into the United States, but also the smuggling of people into the United States. It's very, very lucrative. The American people want not only the invasion stop, they want the opioid crisis stopped. And that means building a barrier, in my mind, a total barrier. You need about 1,500 miles of additional Trump calls it a wall. I call it a border barrier to stop the surges. Now, I've said this in show after show, and I'm just reviewing it here. The border barrier is part of a security system to secure the border. It requires a road next to the fence barrier wall so the U.S. Border Patrol can go to the spot, the location where people are breaking in. So you need not only the border barrier, you need vehicles, you need a road, you need drones, you need helicopters, you need sensors, you need cameras, all to stop the invasion. There's no single solution, because let's say a camera picks up people breaking into the country. Well, it has to call up the nearest U.S. Border Patrol vehicle. They have to get to that location, and that can be many, many miles away, folks. It takes time. And by the time they get there, many of the illegal aliens will have dispersed in many different directions. They might catch a few of them, but they're not catching all of them. And that is illustrating why you need money to have a continuous fence. I call it a human barrier, human fence, that will stop humans from breaking in. You need to slow them down. But keep in mind, what are the drug dealers doing? They're also trying to smuggle drugs into the country. See, it's the immigration issue is first and foremost a job issue, because these people are coming into the United States for one principal reason, and that is to improve their situation in life. In other words, they want a job where they can get paid a lot more than they can in Mexico, and then what they do is send the money home. Most of the money goes home to their family in Mexico. But what does that mean? You have American citizens, especially low income, that are not getting the jobs. These are costing American citizens, born, raised, and educated here, jobs. That's why the immigration issue will again in 2020 be one of the top three or four issues. But equally, and to some extent, I think more important issue, is the fact that the drug cartels are smuggling in the opioids, and that's killing people on the streets. And what the drug dealers are doing, in a way, to a certain extent, it kills their customers. Some of the other opioids are now being laced with fentanyl. Fentanyl is one of the deadliest drugs. Just a small, small quantity can kill you. And that's why we're seeing a dramatic, in the last, now going on 3 years, a dramatic spike up in deaths from opioids. These are people on the street that are buying drugs, and they don't know that, and it could be marijuana, it could be heroin, whatever drug of choice they're buying might be laced with fentanyl, and that will kill you. And that's what's happening. So people will overdose. So it's now very, very dangerous if you just want to try something, because you don't know what's in it. That's the problem with illegal drugs. You don't know what it's laced with or cut with, however you want to explain it. And as a result, we have a crisis. And it's affecting, first of all, from low income to high income. Many of the people are working. I know some of these people think, well, these are addicts. Well, they're people. They're human beings. But many of these people are addicts because of injuries. They're in pain. And they've tried to get relief from that pain, initially by going to doctors. But with the CDC cracking down, they have guidelines now. Many doctors are loath to use opioids in their practice. So what that does is force people that have jobs and have been able to bear the pain with opioids now having to go out on the street and buy this illegally. My take is we're not really being honest with everybody. Yes, the states are going after doctors that prescribe opioids. But what the doctors are saying, excuse me, and these are not the pill mills. These are doctors that have patients that have chronic conditions. In other words, it goes on for months, years, maybe their entire life, and they need relief from pain and opioids, morphine, heroin, and the drugs. I have a chart that has the examples of that, are used to relieve or control the pain. And you're leaving a lot of those people out in the cold. And that's why you have more people seek illegal drugs, because they can't get them from their doctors. That's the bottom line. Now, yes, you still have doctors that are prescribing opioids, but there's a great reluctance now to do that. Yet, we have a large percentage of our population on any given day is in pain. You know, it could happen to you. You could be injured tomorrow. It's called trauma. And you need an operation. They give you an operation. Initially, they give you some opioids, but you continue using them. See, part of the problem is the doctors are simply not educated, do not get enough education into how to manage pain, believe it or not. And then when you have the government cracking down, setting guidelines that, frankly, the trouble with guidelines, there's, for example, they might set it at one level and the person needs just slightly more or significantly more, forget about the quantity, to control the pain. See, there's not one size fits all. So you create a problem where doctors simply don't want to prescribe any of this. They don't want to take patients that have these chronic problems. Chronic, best way to think of chronic, it's a long-lasting problem. It's not something, an acute pain is when you're injured, you have acute pain. But if the pain lasts and lasts for whatever reason, it's called chronic pain. So you need to get the definitions, and you get debates as to how long. What's the cutoff? And the problem is, if it's chronic, you most likely, at least in the past, were going to be treated with opioids, not over-the-counter. The over-counter doesn't work, or it doesn't relieve the pain enough. And keep in mind, most of these people, until the accident or till the incident or event that caused the pain happened, were hardworking people. Some are doctors, lawyers, you name it. And they were functioning and they had jobs. And now suddenly they can't get the prescription that was relieving the pain. And what do? Well, many of them, they have money, at least initially, they go out on the street and buy illegal drugs, the opioids. And that causes other problems. I think we're just simply not dealing. We're not being honest. The mode we're in right now is, who do we blame? Do we blame the drug companies? Do we blame the doctors? Now, the lawyers, like to sue drug companies and doctors. And we have politicians are mostly lawyers. And they go after these doctors. Now, some, I'll be the first to say, there are doctors that set up pill mills and are abusing it. But the majority of doctors aren't. They're trying to do what's right for their patient. This is not an easy problem, but it's a deadly problem. It's no doubt that opioids are killing people. It's across the country. It's in Canada, across the country, and other countries where doctors are prescribing opioids. Why do they do it? It works, folks. It works. Provided you understand how to manage pain and the side effects of opioids. Namely, for most people, I'm not saying all people, but most people, it is addictive. So why it might give you relief from pain if you at some point decide, listen, I want to stop taking this. You can't just quit. You got to gradually phase off of it. In other words, gradually lower the dosage. That's really what should be done. You see, I'm for legalizing these drugs. Now, most people will gasp, you are? Yeah. Because most people are not going to become addicts. They aren't. Most people want to first relieve the pain. Ideally, they want to do away with the pain completely. In other words, the drugs are for relief of pain. And what bothers me is, I recently had, starting in the beginning of the month, I had a muscle spasm in the lower part of my back. I usually get one of these every 5, 6, 7 years. And it is painful. It usually takes me 10 days to 2 weeks, now even longer, till I'm finally, the pain goes away. Now, this time it's more serious because it's not only the lower back, it's also of one leg. And I'm using the non-opioid route. Now, imagine you had that same pain, or at least the intensity of it, and it doesn't go away. Like I said, many of these are automobile accidents, injuries, and when they go to the doctor, for many years, opioids were used. Now they're trying to say they were overused. Yeah, I'm sure there were doctors that overused this. But part of it is simply the doctors weren't trained correctly in how to manage pain. This is a big problem, folks. I know the temptation to say, well, you know, these are just a bunch of drug addicts. It serves them right if they get killed. Well, I don't believe that, because they're your brother, your sister, your mother, your child that for whatever reason got addicted. And many of them are dying of overdoses. And many because fentanyl is deadly. you actually have a more, only a small, small quantity could kill you. That's why they wear suits and masks, so you don't breathe or come in contact with it when they raid illegal drug facilities where they're manufacturing this. It's easy to manufacture, by the way, but it is deadly. Even the people that do it make sure they have masks on. And keep in mind, how is fentanyl, where is it coming from? Mostly from China, communist China. It's smuggled in. And the U.S. customs agents that are looking for packages of these drugs have to be careful. They're wearing suits, masks, because if they come in contact with it. Now, fortunately, they have some technology that without opening the package, they can determine whether fentanyl is in it or not. But that's how deadly it is. And there's a picture, one of the illustrations I have has a picture, or is it one of the videos, of how little it takes to kill you. Here's, and you see it. They have, here's what an overdose of heroin looks like, and here's what an overdose of fentanyl looks like. Yeah, you have a picture. It has a green background. You see the heroin is in a bottle. Both of these bottles have fatal dosages. Well, the heroin looks like, oh, maybe a quarter of an inch of, no, white crystals. The fentanyl, it's just a few grains, and that drives the point home. You see it in a single photo, and I strongly recommend that you go to my companion blog because I give you a lot of information. This is a big issue that needs to be addressed, and there are no easy answers because you have the people that need pain management. They have to be addressed, and that's tens of millions of people. And then the people that legitimately used opioids because they have a chronic condition. Now, because of the government, Center for Disease Control have the guidelines. And besides those, you have state legislatures, Maine is the example, coming out with laws regulating, you know, the dosage. Well, I want the doctors, first of all, to be educated about pain management. That's what's shocking. I'm not saying they have no education, but very little. But I can see the reaction of some doctors is, I'm not going to mess with it. I'm not going to take any patients that require this. Well, I don't think they're doing what they got trained for. Now, that's easy for some doctors to do. You know, I'm an eye doctor. I just do eyes. I don't do pain. You have specialties. But what about the general practitioner or people that specialize with patients that have chronic conditions? And one of the symptoms of these chronic conditions is pain. And it's difficult to figure out first, where it's coming from, and even if you can, what can you do about it? If you had an operation and, for example, the nerves start coming back, and as a result, you get pain. They're not functioning right. Well, what do you do? Well, you can't go operate. What you do is you have to take drugs, most likely for the rest of your life or until they figure it out. That's why I say this is a complicated issue, a serious issue. It's a deadly issue. And there are no simple answers. And passing a law or publishing guidelines that really don't have the room in them, you're always going to have patients where you have to prescribe more than the guidelines. And if a doctor does that, he risks losing their license, going to jail. So this is a serious issue that I think will be in the news for years. And I don't think, talk to the police in your city, county. What they're seeing is more and more deaths. Why is it getting attention? It looks like maybe by the end of 2020, the deaths will be 100,000 or more. It's somewhere between 70,000 to 80,000 right now. And yes, a large part of that is you have heroin users that wherever they get the drug from, even the drug dealer doesn't know there's fentanyl in it, and that's what'll kill you. That's the problem with illegal drugs. You don't know what's in it. That's why I say it's much, much better to have the doctors prescribing legal drugs where you know what you're getting. Otherwise, you're playing, the way I would describe it, as Russian roulette. And many people are forced that don't want to be on the street, are forced to buy drugs. And, you know, you could get picked up for buying a drug, even though the reason you're doing it, you can't get from a doctor anymore what you need. And that's happening, folks. That is happening. This prohibition, the war on drugs has been a total, complete failure. We've wasted billions of dollars, and now it's coming back killing us. That's a lot of Americans dying. That's more Americans dying from opioids than die in traffic accidents. definitely more than homicides. That's why it's getting a lot of attention. And that's why President Trump, let me see if I'm not going to play it, but about a year ago, they brought together a number of people to try to address it. They need to do something about this. And I don't think the answer is going after physicians that are prescribing opioids for patients that really, truly need opioids. That's why I say legalize the whole thing. Go to a doc. See, what people do that are addicts, they'll go to 3, 4, 5, 6 doctors, get prescriptions, and then use the drugs that they get, prescribed drugs. And they'll go to different pharmacies, different doctors, different pharmacies to get the drugs that they need. That's what's going on. Now, getting back to this decision, remember, this is Oklahoma. The judge was Thad Balkman of Cleveland County District Court in Norman, Oklahoma. He gave this decision today. And what's interesting, it was an interesting way they went after Johnson & Johnson. They said Johnson & Johnson is creating a menace, a nuisance that's endangering Oklahomans. Well, yeah, if you don't correctly use the opioids, yeah. What they're claiming is the Johnson & Johnson, in its marketing material, and if you know how drugs are marketed to doctors, many drug companies will, for example, have conferences at various nice locations where they give presentations of the new drugs that they have. And you also have people going around to the doctors. And what are they trying to do? They're trying to sell drugs. Let's be clear. They're trying to make doctors aware of opioids and the fact that it does relieve pain. Now, what the evidence showed was they overhyped it. They said it doesn't cause addiction. It does. But remember, initially, you don't know that. It's not, in other words, it was not as addictive as it's turned out to be. You know, hindsight's always 20/20. But they had major marketing campaigns, and it's not just Johnson & Johnson. One of the other ones is Purdue Pharma, and what we're talking about there is OxyContin. And yeah, there's no doubt that a lot of people took OxyContin, got good results, but if they took it over many weeks, they became addicted to it. It helped the patient. That's what you need to understand. The patient presents himself to the doctor. I have pain here, there, everywhere, and sometimes it is everywhere. What can you give me to relieve the pain? Try OxyContin. That's one choice. And the question is then, what's the dosage? Sometimes the pain doesn't go away, and you have to increase the dosage. So it's no doubt that the drug companies have made a lot of profits on opioid drugs. There's no denying that. But they spent a lot of money developing them, too. And they had to market them to get the doctors educated. But now, and remember, this is goes into the 90s, the late 90s, like in 1997, there's a major marketing campaign by Johnson & Johnson because they saw what Purdue Pharma, a competitor of theirs, was doing in the OxyContin market. Now, I'm not going to get into the legal opinion. It's 32-page ruling. But a lot of the drug companies are looking at this because they know that all your drug companies are doing this. They're marketing to doctors, both in their offices and at these conferences. And these drugs were used primarily to relieve pain. That's their primary use, and it worked. They were effective. That's why they became popular. But by becoming popular, people were taking it for long periods of time, especially if you had a chronic condition. And as a result, people were addicted to the drugs, point one. And point two is, if you wanted to get off the addiction, it can be a painful process, and it's going to take time. I think this ruling will be overturned. What the judge is saying is Johnson & Johnson downplayed the risk factors of the drugs, especially the risk of becoming addicted. That's a factual question, and that's based on the evidence. It doesn't surprise me, though, that any drug company, if you want to sell anything, you need a salesman to go out to sell it to the doctors, dentists, or whatever you're trying to sell. And yeah, you have ethical salesmen and unethical. But if the the doctor prescribes this and the patients like it, in other words, it relieves their pain, the condition they presented themselves for, what happens? You know, word of mouth, opioid manufacturers, these drugs work, and it's helping our patients. But what's the danger? It's overdose. You can get an overdose of opioids, and that can kill you. And when you were forced off the prescribed drugs, and some people have been, where do they go to relieve the pain? They go onto the street by illegal drug. And that's where you have the deaths. The problem is chronic pain management. And how do you treat it? I think you have to treat it with drugs, but you got to be very, very careful, which means the doctors have to be educated as to the risks, the dosages, and all this takes time. And many doctors just are not prescribing it. It's up to the doctor to write a prescription. And it's something to keep in mind, because I was listening to one doctor saying the CDC overstated how much the doctors were over-prescribing it. And he said, let me tell you the difference. In Canada, you can write a prescription and say, refill it 3 times, 3X. Can't do that in the United States. So what happens? The patient comes in, gets one prescription, the prescription runs out, he comes into the doctor, gets another prescription. So for however long this lasts, you're going to have multiple prescriptions. So it's overstating the problem. It's the same doctor with the same patient, he has a chronic condition, and he has to come into the doctor, let's say every week, 10 days, 2 weeks, maybe a month's supply, and again, and again, and again. And as a result, you know, there's a lot of finger pointing here. First to the drug companies, then to the doctor, and yes, even the patient. And you have a lot of lawyers involved rubbing your hands together. We're going to make a killing, a class action suit. What's getting lost here? There's two things that are getting lost. We have millions of Americans, patients, that have pain, and they're looking for relief. And I mean pain, and I've had it recently, where you can't sleep. And if you can't sleep, you get fatigued. You know, for a while, you can stay in bed and rest, but eventually, you need to get outside, walk, because that's part of the treatment. You have many people that have never felt this pain, from whatever cause. And let me add another dimension to it. As people get older, especially retired on Medicare, talk to your parents, grandparents that are in their 50s, 60s, 70s. What's one of the common problems? Pain, whether it's back pain, wherever the pain is, and they need treatment for it. And yes, why over-the-counter drugs are the first, let's say, line of defense, they don't always work. And in fact, many times they don't. And you need prescribed drugs, and that means opioids. And you need to be aware if you have that situation, and it's a chronic situation. See, I've been in pain for about 30 days, about 4 weeks. The pain has gone down, but initially, the first 2 weeks, 3 weeks, I was in pain, and I was taking the non-opioid drugs. Now, mine is just, there are things I can do. Lose weight is one of them. Exercise is another. But it's hard to focus when you have a sharp pain, and it keeps you up at night. Now, many people that need the opioids, the pain is unbearable without the drugs. The reason the people are taking the drugs is not because they want to be an addict. They want not to be incapacitated by the pain. We need to keep the focus in on why is the person taking the drugs. Now, it's not just pain, physical pain. And people become addicts for different reasons, but once they become hooked, if you will, or addicted, it becomes very difficult for them to get off the drug. Because usually you have a period of withdrawal. We need to really understand chronic pain, both the patients, the doctors, and the government regulators, how to treat it. You know, part of the problem is just education of doctors and patients and the politicians. And keep in mind, the reason why it's a crisis is in many cities where it may be at one time you had a few overdoses in a month. Now they're getting several every day, and that's spreading across this country. We do have an opioid crisis, and what's making it worse is fentanyl that's smuggled into the country. It's mailed into the country. And if customs don't pick it up, when it, for example, a lot comes through New York City, they don't catch it there or wherever they're mailing it to. A very small package of fentanyl could kill millions. It's dangerous stuff, folks. For example, fentanyl is 50 times more toxic than heroin. And then you have carfentanil that's many orders of magnitude deadlier than fentanyl. It's a killer, and you don't wake up. You hear these stories where their son or daughter was in a home sleeping and taking a drug, and they don't wake up. And it can happen just like that. So, yes, Donald Trump did sign legislation to hopefully do battle with the opioid crisis. And supposedly the communist Chinese agreed to try to stop the smuggling of fentanyl into the United States. But apparently that's not been happening. In other words, fentanyl is coming in. It really hasn't been stopped. And it's killing upwards of 100,000. And it'll be more. It'll be more until we get a handle on this. And what happens is many people that had legitimate injuries now become, yep, you got it, drug dealers selling opioids, not only to deal with their own pain problems, but providing the drugs that formerly patients got from their doctors. So you got to be careful because it takes a while. Remember, this has been developing over almost 20 years and become more and more aware of the side effects, the long-term effects of opioid addiction. It is an epidemic. It's a killer. Initially, it was a painkiller that's now become a killer of humans. So I've given you a lot of information, a lot of videos primarily, on various aspects to this. Some are very, very good, mainly so you become aware. I think if you understand that now some of the drugs that I'm sure some of you are purchasing on the street may be, and you don't know, contain fentanyl, it's like playing Russian roulette where you spin the pistols, have a bullet in and pull the trigger, and, well, you might get lucky one or two times, but if the third time the heroin or whatever drug you're taking has some of that in it, it could kill you. It is that dangerous. Now, keep in mind, in a medical setting, they use it, but it's it's controlled. You know the dosage. That's what's key here. It has to be precisely measured because fentanyl works as an opioid. But if you don't know the dosage, you don't know what's in it, and that's what's killing people. Unawares, they are killed because even the drug dealer doesn't know. And let me make clear, I'm not recommending taking drugs necessarily to deal with your pain, or if you do, take non-prescription drugs available over the counter. But you need to see a doctor. At some point, if you have pain that's lasting a couple of weeks or even a month, eventually you should go see a doctor for assistance. That's the first answer. But what I'm trying to say is now many doctors are not going to prescribe what for many of you you need. You need an opioid. Some of you will need surgery. That's why it's important to, eventually you're going to need to see a specialist. Initially, you should see your general practitioner and tell them where the problem is, how long it's lasts, what have you done about it. In my case, I found that a hot shower over the area where the pain is and on my leg works. So does ibuprofen and Tylenol. But let's say it didn't, then yeah, I would go to a doctor. As a matter of fact, I was considering it. But fortunately for me, this last week, the pain has gone, it's less and less. I'm still in some pain. Not a lot, but some. But this is maybe, I've had this five or six times over many decades, so I'm aware that it usually happens in where there's temperature changes. I will get a muscle spasm. But it happens to, you can go online and get a lot of information on this. I think we should focus on relieving the pain of those people that are in pain, whether they're a result of an accident or injury or they're addicted to a drug. It should be primarily a medical problem and addressed as a medical problem, not a law enforcement problem. Law enforcement, the reason they're involved together with usually the fire department, the emergency personnel, is they arrive on the scene and one or two people are dead and they're trying to save the life of another. Now, there is a drug that if they're close to death or even there are a kit that they can use if it's used in a timely manner that can bring them back. And I'm not trying to practice medicine here. What I'm trying to see, it is law enforcement and emergency, you know, the ambulance with the medical personnel that take them to the hospital that are seeing this. And it's a dramatic spike upwards. So the overdoses are killing people, and it's primarily from opioids or fentanyl. that is mixed in with some of the other opioids such as heroin. So I'm not trying to make you an expert because I don't use alcohol nor do I use drugs. But I have hay fever, for example, so I take Sudafed for my hay fever in the fall. And if I have a headache, I'll take Tylenol. And if I have some swelling or pain, I'll use ibuprofen. And I always have trouble pronouncing it. Think of it as Advil, Motrin, ibuprofen is how you pronounce it. But those are non-opioids. So you have four non-opioids that are available without a prescription, but then you have six opioids, codeine being the more common one, oxycodone, Percocet are some of the more common ones. Now, I want to get back to, I think I've given as much information on this that I want, and I'll come back to it as we learn more. I really had to do a lot of research for this. I'm not, don't even pretend, I'm not an expert, but I wanted to really try to understand what's going on here so I can explain it to you. Because I'm sure there are many, many people out there that what I've been talking about, they're not into. They're like me. They're not using illegal drugs. And I try not to take even over-the-counter drugs unless I really need them. And like I said, the only time I really need them is in the fall when I have hay fever or when I'm getting a sinus. I have a certain extent sinus problems. And what I will take is primarily Sudafed or a generic form of it. And also Benadryl. Now, the problem with Benadryl is it makes you sleepy. See, at one time I would take Actifed at night because it made me sleepy, and Sudafed in the day. And I had a real bad case of hay fever when I was on the East Coast. Not as bad as in Texas. Texas is not as bad as the East Coast. And I really had no problems when I lived on the West Coast. So it's where you live is a factor. And I was miserable living in New York City, New Jersey area in the fall. Runny nose. You name it, I had to have the medications or I couldn't function. It wasn't so much painful, it's just constantly rubbing my eyes, sneezing. It's an allergy. So you use the medications that are available, in this case, antihistamines. The reason I'm telling you that, we all have or potentially will have medical conditions that will require drugs. Today, if you go to a doctor, most times they're going to prescribe a drug. I'm not saying 100%, but if there's a drug that deals with the condition that you present the doctor with, that's what happens. But you got to be careful because some of these have side effects. Opioids have side effects. You develop a tolerance for them and you become addicted to them. And to get off them so you don't need to use them takes a period of time and you're going to experience the symptoms of withdrawal. And it's difficult. I have a video clip of a doctor that, like I said, he injured his foot in a motorcycle accident and was trying to get off the opioids, and it was living hell. That's how he described it. Be careful. Do the research. And also get a second or third opinion. That's something I always recommend. Now, it looks like President Trump, when he was in the G7 summit, was persuaded by the president of France to maybe meet with the Iranians. And Trump was cautiously optimistic that that would happen. Well, that lasted for a day, and now the Iranians have made very, very clear that they will not meet with the United States until sanctions are done away with. They're not going to, folks. The United States is not going to lift sanctions. It's clear to me that the regime and the economy of Iran, it's really the people of Iran that are suffering. And see, I think ultimately what's going to happen is the people of Iran are going to revolt against the current regime. But who has all the guns? The regime has all the guns. So like in Hong Kong, where you have protests, I think that ultimately will happen over Iran, but there the regime has, let us say, will use violence to make sure that the protests don't get out of hand. It's going to take the Iranian people must overthrow their totalitarian bureaucracy. And that's what the regime is fearful of. They will lose control as inflation. They have double-digit, upwards of 50% inflation. Their economy is not growing. It's declining in size. So they're feeling the pressure. Sanctions do work. The problem is it takes time for them to work. And if you have one or more nations cheating on the sanctions, and who would that nation be? Russia's an ally of the Islamic Republic of Iran, but there are other nations. And that's the problem with sanctions. They just take time, and if there's one or more nations that are cheating, it just takes that much longer. But what's the key point? And I think this is going to be the central issue, is Donald Trump has made very clear in terms of Iran and North Korea that they cannot have nuclear weapons. He does not want nuclear proliferation, where Iran, together with North Korea, has both nuclear weapon as well as a delivery system. In this case, it could be aircraft, but it's really missiles. That's the primary delivery system. North Korea already has, estimates are 50 to 60 nuclear weapons. They have missiles, short-term, intermediate, and they are developing a long-range intercontinental ballistic missile that could eventually hit the United States. Now, they're not testing that missile, nor have they had any nuclear test. But Donald Trump has made very, very clear to our media that his goal is to make sure that both Iran and North Korea are nuclear free. Now, Iran wants to be the hegemon, the superpower of the Middle East. But if Iran were to have several of these nuclear weapons that they could fit on a missile, that could be delivered by a missile, what's going to happen? Well, first of all, I think Israel is going to take them out. And that's not an easy mission, because look at a map. Israel's far away from Iran. It would be a complicated mission. And first and second of all, you probably would have to do this repeatedly. So while you might get the advantage of a surprise attack initially, you're going to have to go back second, third, or fourth time to destroy the nuclear plants that are both researching, testing, and building these nuclear weapons. So you need to take them out. And most of these facilities are located underground and in mountains. So it's not going to be an easy target, which means most likely the United States is going to have to be involved either with bunker busters or nuclear weapons. So once the Israelis and the United States have clear intelligence that Iran has a nuclear weapon, has several of them, and now they can fit them on missiles that could hit Israel, Europe, and our major ally, for example, Saudi Arabia. At that point, the United States and Israel most likely will have to take them out, destroy that capability. So both the Iranians and North Koreans know that that's the United States position. We will not allow either Iran or North Korea to have those weapons, both the nuclear weapon and the delivery system, the missiles. It only would take one, depends on the size of the yield of the nuclear weapon, to take out most of Israel. And Israel is not that far from Europe. You see, you have countries in Europe that want to do business, France being one of them, but others, with Iran. Now, what's stopping it is the sanctions that the U.S. has imposed on this. And the U.S., Trump was right. He scrapped the agreement that several European countries, including Russia, France, Germany, and the European Union, together with the United States, the agreement that we had with Iran. The problem I had with it, and Trump has with it, at some point in time in the future, the Iranians were just going to enrich the uranium that they need to a much higher level that you need to have a nuclear weapon. It wasn't a permanent solution. Trump is right that you have to convince the Iranians it's in their interest not to have nuclear weapons, because if that's what they're trying to do, then sanctions will be on. You're not going to get any better terms. You have to renounce and destroy your nuclear capability, both to produce them, test them, and it's not just the nuclear warheads, but also the delivery systems, in this case, the missiles. So I don't know where this goes. I don't think there's going to be any meeting anytime soon, because I don't think President Trump is going to, in any way, relax these sanctions. It's not going to happen. Now, maybe Trump will surprise me, but I don't think so. So that's the news today. The three stories I wanted to cover. There won't be any meetings because Iran wants the sanctions lifted first. It's not going to happen. I think they run the danger at some point in provoking an attack, a preemptive attack by the United States. If he kills any Americans, military or civilians, I think, I'm pretty sure President Trump will launch missiles and destroy wherever those military forces, whether it's fighter planes, boats, whatever source of the attack missiles come from. At that point, we'll be at war, and Trump will destroy any weapon systems that were involved in killing American soldiers, citizens abroad. And if the Iranian regime keeps trying to stop tankers going through the Strait of Hormuz, it's going to happen. They're getting desperate, folks. Desperate people do desperate things, and that will bring the United States, will retaliate, and then I think we'll be at war. And not surprisingly, stay tuned. Eventually, the Supreme Court, I think, will side with the United States government that the Department of Homeland Security definitely has the authority to establish the rules for the incarceration of illegal aliens, both their parents and the children, in appropriate facilities as described by the acting secretary of Homeland Security. And I went over that press conference. So if you check that out, you can get more of the details. I thought it was well thought out. My only complaint is I think it would be very, very expensive, especially if the surge of illegal aliens continues. Thank you for listening. And now my favorite song, America the Beautiful.
My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of KDUX Web Radio, Richland College, or the Dallas County Community College District. You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas, with a voice of Richland College.
You are listening to the Pronk Pop Show, presented by Raymond Thomas Pronk, the People's Paladin Pronk, propagating faith, family, friends, freedom first. Broadcasted by Renaissance Radio, Radiating Reason, and KDUX Web Radio. Podcasted by PronkPops.wordpress.com. and KDUX Web Radio.wordpress.com.